Well, we've been looking into this passage in the book of Matthew, which has been commonly termed the Lord's Prayer in Matthew chapter 6. Jesus is instructing people. You know, it's a mysterious thing, this prayer. We don't have our handle upon it, and yet Jesus is saying, do you want to know how to pray? This is a model in which you can pray. And in verses 9 to 13, as Sean read for us this morning, walks through the six elements of how we can pray. And so this morning, we are setting in on the fourth element. Give us today our daily bread. Our daily bread. So when Michelle and I went on our honeymoon way back when, it was so much fun. We went down to Southern California. We spent a couple days in Disneyland before heading further south to San Diego. We frolicked on the beach. We went to the pool. We went shopping. Did I just say we frolicked on the beach? Swam. We swam and walked along the beach. frolic, that's just very awkward. Sorry. What did you guys learn today? Oh, our pastor and his wife frolicked on the beach on their honeymoon. So sorry. We swam in the ocean. We walked along the beach. We went shopping. We went out to eat lots. We even visited Shamu. We lived the high life, and it was awesome. Until we ran out of money. Now, when I say when we ran out of money, you mean like, oh, like until you had to dip into the credit card to use that for the rest of the trip. I didn't own a credit card. Michelle didn't own a credit card. So when I say we ran out of money, literally I mean we ran out of money. I went to the bank, to the ATM, tried to get money out, and they only gave 20s, and it said my bank balance was $18. I'm like, oh no. And suddenly with 5 days left on our honeymoon, we started to panic. What do we do now? We don't have access to any money. We had the following things. We had our hotel with a very unimpressive breakfast, of which we just started hoarding. We're like, just fill your pockets with as much stuff as you can. But to our discredit, we didn't actually go into the bank and get the $18 out. We also didn't phone anybody, i.e. our parents. Michelle said, don't worry, I can just phone my mom and she'll just send us some money. And I'm like, absolutely not. I was like, do you know what this looks like if the fact that her new husband can't even provide for her on her honeymoon? Like, so I would rather my wife starve than my reputation get tarnished. I realize that. Pretty awkward as well. But so there we were for 5 days and just living off of the all-inclusive breakfast that we had, and that was it, and the apples and oranges that we could fill our pockets with, except for the one day when we went to SeaWorld, we had a coupon for one cheeseburger. One. So we split it into half, and I remember Michelle just saying, eat slow, eat slow. And I'm like, oh my goodness. It was awful, I'll be honest, it was awful. By the time we got to the airline and got on the flight, I remember just dinging the thing right away, and I'm like, can we get our food? And he goes, sir, we have to wait until everyone's on the plane first and get up in the air before we feed people. I'm like, oh, okay. It's like I didn't get it, I'm just starving. And then as soon as we ate, I dinged it again. I'm like, can we get seconds? Is there seconds? He goes, sir, we have to finish serving everybody else first as well before we have seconds handed out. And I was so hungry that thankfully they did have seconds. The person beside us actually made a comment of how ravenous we were and eating fast. But it provided a way for me and Michelle and, to see in a new way, give us our daily bread. It's only at a time when we don't have it that we realize our huge need for it. Give us our daily bread. You see, it's at this point in the Lord's Prayer that it seems to shift into us asking for things. Now, yes, we've already asked, Lord, make your name holy and may your will be done and may your kingdom come. But those are mays. Right now, what we're doing is a direct change. Notice the pronoun, give us our daily bread. And some people say in prayer, it's not about asking God for things. Either we're not supposed to do that or it doesn't really matter. Right? So let's not ask God for things. But those things are wrong. We're absolutely allowed to ask God for things. And Jesus tells us, because in the Lord's Prayer it says, give us our daily bread. It is a direct ask. Humans have a natural migration to ask God for things. Whether big or small, it seems that every human being has something inside us that we will ask God for things. You know, when there's a tragedy that takes place, often people say, our thoughts and prayers are with you, right? In good times or bad, eventually we do ask God for something. As someone once said, there are no atheists on a falling airplane. And so we do ask God for things, and this transition takes place in the Lord's Prayer. Now, we have to understand just the magnitude of which Jesus is talking about when he says this line, "Give us today our daily bread." First of all, what he's doing is he's alluding to a part of the common story of the Israelite people. So for Jesus to speak to a predominantly Jewish crowd, what he's doing is by speaking, "Give us our daily bread," he's referring to an event that took place all the way back in the second book of the Bible, Exodus. And for a predominantly Jewish crowd, they would have understood it like that. Give us our daily bread. You see, way back in the book of Exodus, we're told that the Israelites were slaves to the most powerful nation on earth at that time, the Egyptians. They had no rights, they were worked to the bone, and they got fed very little. And then, some of us may know the story, God prompts Moses, kind of gives him a push in the back to go talk to Pharaoh, a very powerful figure, to go, "Let my people go." And after some discussion and some nasty plagues, Pharaoh finally tells Moses, "Take your people and get out of here." And then there's the whole Red Sea incident where God parts it. The Israelites walk through and then closes it in on the Egyptians. It's a long way to tell, a short way to tell a very long story of what took place. But through these dramatic events, what I'm getting at is all of a sudden you've got thousands upon thousands of Israelites standing in the desert who are now free people, free from the slavery that they had way back in Egypt. For the first time, any of these people, they were there for 400 years. So you have every single one of these people smelling free air for the very first time. And what does it say in the book of Exodus? That they begin walking, and what does it say? Can you guess what the very first thing they grumble about is? Anybody guess? Food. Food. It's just like students, you know what it's like when you're in a hurry at home and you rush off to school because mom's honking the horn or whatever, and you get to school and it's just that time at lunchtime and you're starving and you go to open up your backpack and what did you forget at home? Your food, your lunch. And you're like, "Oh, darn, you know, what do I do? Do I go flirt with that guy or girl and ask them for half of their lunch? I don't know, but I'm starving." Or if you're in the office and someone's just heating up their leftover roast beef and mashed potatoes and gravy and you're like, "That smells so good." And then it's at that moment you realize you forgot your food as well. You see, we are so prone to go back to food. And we could say, "Well, the Jewish people, you know, how dare you? You're free people now. You shouldn't be thinking about this." And yet the stomach always speaks to us. We know it. And so we're told that they grumble to Moses. And they actually grumble to him saying, "Oh, it would have been better that we died in Egypt because at least there we got some food to eat." And God responds to them. God responds to the people, and he says this in verse 4 of Exodus 16. "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'I will rain down bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day.'" Go down to verse 17. "And so the Israelites did as they were told. Some gathered much and some little. And when they measured it by the omer," which I presume is a precise way of measuring bread. I think the handful or the armful is maybe an easier way, but there's an omer. That's an instrument for that. "The one who gathered much did not have too much, and the one who gathered little did not have too little. Everyone had gathered just as much as they needed." And in verse 19, Moses said to them, "No one is to keep any of it until morning. Give us this day our daily bread." I love how author Stuart Weber points out about the Israelites. He says this, he says, "They were always just one day away from starvation, and yet they ate well during all those decades. In fact, 4 decades worth of wandering around a desert and eating daily bread and daily quail or meat that came to them." It's interesting here because God says that they were only to collect for 24 hours. It kind of seems a bit odd, actually, doesn't it? If God can allow manna, this bread to form on the earth and they get it from nothing, then why can't he just say, like, "You know what? Gather as much as you can and put it in some storehouses, and then when it runs out, I will provide more for you." But for 4 decades, God says you're not to gather more than what you can have for that day. And everybody had just enough. And in fact, in later on in that chapter, it says, "However, some of them paid no attention to Moses." In other words, there's a little bit of greed that hops in there. And it says they kept part of it until morning. But listen to this. But it was full. By morning, it was full of maggots. It's a nice thought this morning. It's full of maggots, and it began to smell. It's not the bread became crusty and not very good to eat. It became very uneatable. It became full of maggots and began to smell. It's as if God is creating another miracle in order to teach his people a lesson. Guys, I told you, it's only for this day, not for tomorrow, not for the next day or the day after, this day. And for those of you who disregard it, you will see in a visual way and with your nose, it will hit you in the face just how much I'm serious about this. Now, I think we have to understand the lesson here that God is teaching his people. First of all, we have to understand what Jesus is not saying here in the Lord's Prayer or what God is saying here in the book of Exodus. God is not saying that we should only live for the now. In other words, whatever savings you have in RRSPs, RESPs, TFSAs, your home, sell it, what all those things. He's not saying just get rid of all of that. And as Trooper said in their song so long ago, we're only here for a good time, not a long time. So just live, baby, live. That is not what God is saying in the book of Exodus. In fact, Jesus says later on, he says, we're not just to build a building and just throw it up and grab some 2x4s and nails. He said, a wise builder actually plans it out first. So stewardship and wise planning is what Jesus is saying. He's not saying get rid of it all and just live for the moment. But by the same token, it's just interesting that Jesus, not only here, but time and time again, he doesn't have a preoccupation for tomorrow like we do. I think we are obsessed not only with this moment, but almost more so for the next moment. Do you find that? I find that in my schedule. I find that in my money. I find that in so much of my time. I'm thinking ahead all the time. But Jesus says, even later on in this very same chapter, he says, do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the pagans run after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. In other words, give us this day. It's all we need. It's just this day. Give us this day, today, our daily bread. Michelle and I, during our first 2 years of marriage, we didn't frolic on beaches, but we did both work. And she worked at a preschool, and I worked as a server at Milestones in Langley. And first few years of marriage is easy. We did our budget. We did our budget on a, you know those realtor pads of paper that they give you in the mail for free? We use all of those all the time. We try to steal as many as we can. It's great. But that's how we did our budget. And there was probably 7 items of expenses on there. Rent, food, mortgage, or car payment, you know, a few things like that. And that was our established expenses. And then we would put our income into this, and it would be like Michelle's work, Jeff's work. That's it. Never. In all honesty, never in those 2 years did our income line up with our expenses. In other words, our expenses were higher than our income. The only X factor that we had to play with that we didn't know how much it would be was my tips coming in from work. And so every month, as we did our budget, we just kind of went, how's this going to work? And for a person who looks at the next moment a lot, and I'm a stressor in regards to finances, I stressed a lot. God, I don't know how we're going to come up with an extra $300 or $400, whatever it was that we needed. But as I worked and kept tips and brought them home, and all of a sudden, everything started to get paid for, and we used envelopes, and I remember after the first month, we had $5 extra. And I think we went and bought a cheeseburger. I don't know, I can't remember, but it was like party time because this is like the best thing in the world. We have extra than what we needed. And then the next month was another $5. And the next month, maybe $30. But every single month, it became easier and easier for us to go, I don't know where the money's going to come from. Because every single month, God provided. Now, we didn't get rich, but God provided for our needs. I love this passage in the book of Proverbs. It reminds me so much of our time then. The cry says to God is this: keep falsehood and lies far from me. And listen, give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? Or I may become poor and steal and so dishonor the name of my God. Give us this day, give us today our daily bread. So Jesus is making a claim here that we are allowed to ask God for things just as God provided for the Israelites in Egypt, out of Egypt and in the desert. He's saying, your good Father is going to provide for you, and we can ask for that. But I also want to mention something else here, because it's fascinating what Jesus does in regards to the symbol of bread. You see, what Jesus does is when he talks about give us today our daily bread, he's not just talking about Exodus. He brings in a whole other element. And this is so cool because he infuses himself into the Lord's Prayer. Check this out. In mentioning the word bread, Jesus is doing something far more than just alluding to events. Bread or food was constantly at the center of Jesus' ministry. Just some examples out of this, and this is definitely not an exhaustive list, but we are told time and time again that Jesus dines with quote-unquote sinners. In other words, bread is shared, food is shared. There's only one miracle mentioned in all four Gospels, in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and that is the feeding of the 5,000, when bread was given out so that the people could be satisfied. The first miracle that Jesus performs is turning water to wine, but where is it done? At a feast, where bread or food is served in abundance. The last act that Jesus does before being arrested and crucified is that he eats with his disciples. They break bread together. Jesus himself is born in a town called Bethlehem. Bethlehem is broken up into two words in Hebrew. Beth or bet in Hebrew is this term house, and lehem is bread. So in other words, literally, Jesus is born in the town called the house of bread. And put together in John chapter 6, the culmination of this is that Jesus says, for the bread of God is the bread that comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. And they say, sir, always give us this bread, to which Jesus declares, and this is the pinnacle of it all, he says, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry. Isn't this beautiful? Jesus is infusing himself into something common to every Jewish person. And what he's saying here is actually that he is the culmination, he is the new and ultimate manna for humans. It's not just provide for my daily physical needs, but Jesus is saying, I am the culmination and the fulfillment of the need that everybody has spiritually. Give us today our daily bread. So I want to talk about three things that this does for us as we are reminded, give us today our daily bread. Because I think so much in the time of Jesus, as they lived really hand-to-mouth, meal-to-meal, we have a bit of a separation in our culture today. Maybe some of us here today live like that. I know our culture, by and large, does not live meal-to-meal. In other words, wondering where our next meal is going to come from. We have pantries. We have fridges. We have freezers or multiple freezers. You know, we have a place where we can store food, so we're not wondering about our physical needs. But I want to talk to you about three things that I think praying this prayer, give us today our daily bread, it does for us. Number one is solidarity. I think it's very important to notice here that Jesus doesn't say and instruct us to say, give me this day my daily bread, but rather give us. It's almost as if it's a cry on behalf of all mankind. There's this beautiful Latin prayer that cries out, O God, to those who have hunger, give bread. And to those who have bread, give the hunger for justice. In other words, we're all in this together. As N.T. Wright points out, in praying this, we must pray for the needs of the entire world, where millions go hungry and many starve. And already we may sense, bubbling up out of the prayer, the realization that if we truly pray it, we might also have something to do about it. to become part of God's answer to our own praying. I love this. I love that we are reminded that physical needs will always play a part of our broken world. It just will. We will never be at a time on this side of heaven until the kingdom is fully ushered in where we don't see people hungry for food. But for all of us, even if our vocations vary, all of us have a responsibility as apprentices of Jesus to play a part in helping us to be part of the solution. And that's why I love that part of our ministry that Tom and Darlene lead is to feed hungry people on a Sunday night, to feed them a meal, to give them their daily bread, and then to pull up beside them and have a conversation with people. It's beautiful. And it may feel like a bit of a hamster wheel because next Sunday they come back, and next Sunday we... And that's exactly how we are. We are people who are prone to hunger. And it's a beautiful thing when God leads us to helping people by feeding them. Give us today our daily bread. To also think that quite possibly the next time we eat a meal, it is the result of someone else praying for us. We are all in this together. Number two is dependence. Dependence. 19th century philanthropist George Mueller had a passion to help kids who were hungry. And in his day, he began 117 schools, go figure, from one person who had this passion, and he helped feed and care for just over 10,000 orphans. And all of this was done through no special strategy, no CEOs, no vision boards or to-do lists, just daily prayer. Author Pete Gregg tells this story that took place one day. He says, on one occasion, George Mueller stood before 300 hungry orphans gathered for breakfast, knowing full well there was no food in the kitchen, and he said grace, thanking God in faith for the food he was going to give to eat. And he said, no sooner did he say amen, that suddenly there was a banging at the door, and the local baker entered carrying three huge trays of fresh bread, explaining that he'd been up since 2 a.m. that morning, baking especially for him. The milkman appeared right next, announcing that his cart had broken down outside and wondering if they could use a load of fresh milk. And hundreds of children got their daily bread that day, washed down with warm, creamy milk. He describes it this way. He says, it's a breakfast that they would surely remember for the rest of their lives whenever they prayed, give us today our daily bread. See, I honestly think that we may think, man, they had it hard back then. Or, you know, in Jesus' time, living hand to mouth, that's so different than us today. But I wonder if our securities are misguided. That when we actually come to think of it, that we are not so far away from the people who lived literally meal to meal. We have security in our cupboards and our pantries until we lose our job for long enough. We have security in our vehicles until we hear a funny sound one day and find out that funny sound is going to cost us $4,000 to fix. We have security in our credit cards until the credit card won't swipe anymore. We have security in our marriage until suddenly our spouse decides to leave one day. We have security in our parenting skills until one or more of our children go wayward. And there's nothing that we can do in control of this except just to weep at their decisions. You see, we have security until we don't have security anymore. On November 8th of last year, a brush fire began in the town of Paradise, California. And it would prove to be the worst and the deadliest in that state's history ever. In a matter of hours, people went from a normal day, being on a bit of a fire watch, to having absolute chaos. And in the end, over 80 people lost their lives to the fire and 6,000 homes destroyed. You see, our security is our security until it's gone. And I guarantee you, none of those people woke up that day thinking that these things would take place. There's a beautiful prayer of the Heidelberg Catechism of 1563. Give us today our daily bread. That is, or in other words, provide us with all our bodily needs so that we may acknowledge that thou art the only source of all that is good. Therefore, may we withdraw our trust from all creatures and place it in thee alone. And I believe that when we declare and ask, Lord Jesus, give us today our daily bread, it's a declaration against our own securities. It's against those things that we think we have built up into our own empire. And it's saying, God, I need you, just as we sang earlier. Lord, I need you for everything. And the third and last thing that it does for us as we pray this prayer is gratitude. Anne Voskamp struggled with the death of her sister at a very young age, and she struggled with this for years and years. She said she lived with a cloud over her head, finding it difficult to see God in her life and even to see much of how life fit together. But she said instead of just throwing her hands up and giving up, she leaned in and wanted to learn more about this. She wanted something better for her life. And in 2011, she wrote a book called 1,000 Gifts. And this was kind of her offering to God and her gift to people to say the document, this was her document for finding her journey back to her faith. A way to clear the cloud out of her head. And she did this by practicing thanksgiving. She lists in the book 1,000 ways that she gives thanks for in her life. Now, I don't want to paint our dark experiences. I know many of us have them, our struggles, and just say, you know what? We're going to paint over those with just one big give thanks brush, and everything just goes away. Not at all. But I don't want to also minimize the effect that giving thanks does to us. She wrote in there little things like giving thanks for the morning shadows across old floors, or putting on nylons without a run. I'm not used to that one. I don't know what that means, but that's what she gave thanks for. But she said it helped change her perspective. Her challenge out of the book is to take time to write out actually 1,000 gifts from the Lord. And by doing so, she believes that our brains actually become rewired. And guess what? She's not alone. This week I read a study out of the University of California, Berkeley, and they wanted to explore the effects of gratitude. And so a few years ago, they took two subject groups. They asked one of them to write regular letters of gratitude to people while the other group did nothing. And they said that after 3 months, they retested them. And after those 3 months, they used an fMRI scanner, whatever that is, to explore the difference. And they found that after only 3 months, the gratitude letter writers showed greater activation in the medial prefrontal cortex when they experienced gratitude. Now, I'm sure we all know what that means, but just in case you don't, in layman's terms, this helped train the brain to be more sensitive to gratitude, and ultimately, it improves mental health. All because they practiced giving thanks. Who knew that it had a physiological effect on us, not just a feel-good effect? And so my question for us today is, how do we practice thanksgiving in our culture? Is it limited to just a repetitive grace before a meal? Do we only say thank you when we get out of a ticket that we know we should have gotten? Or do we say thank you only when we get a job? Or are we aware of the everyday around us? That in the middle of maybe what many of us would call crazy town, which is our lives, that we open our eyes, that we stop, and we acknowledge God as the giver of all good things. Give us today our daily bread. It helps us think about solidarity, our dependence, and gratitude. Sarah Van Breathnach says this, gratitude bestows reverence, allowing us to encounter everyday epiphanies, those transcendent moments of awe that change forever how we experience life and the world. So I was thinking, what do we do with this? Well, in a moment, we're going to be partaking in communion, and what a natural way for us to transition in this is to actually remember not only that Jesus provides for our physical needs, but that Jesus himself is our bread, who provided for us by going to the cross and dying for us to provide grace that we may live a new life. But I also want us to be aware in a new way of this week, even just the next 7 days, of what God has given to us. And often if it's not in front of our face, I don't know how you are, but if it's not in front of my face, I often forget it. So that's why we use sticky notes, you know, don't forget your lunch, don't forget to do this or remember this. And so what we want to do is provide you guys, all of us, with sticky notes. They're going to be on the table as you leave, and you may have saw them when you came in and went, what are these for? We want to provide those for us. And what I want to do is ask us this, is that we would put them in front of us wherever we migrate to in our natural rhythms this week. In other words, you may want to put it on the bathroom mirror, because the very first thing you do when you wake up, you'll see the mirror and you'll see the sticky note, and you can write whatever you want on there. This can be a great family exercise. You may simply want to write, give us today our daily bread. And instead of worrying about what the day's going to look like, suddenly you just go focused on this and you go, God, would you provide our daily bread for today? Maybe you want to put it in your slipper. Be careful you don't get a paper cut. But as you go in there, you go, something's in my slipper, and you pull it out, and you go, all right, I want to start today with these words. Maybe you put it on your fridge. God, thank you for providing for us today. Or your freezer, or your coffee maker. Put it on your steering wheel, but don't look at it while you're driving. Distracted driving is not allowed. But maybe put it in your way. And I don't know, we've got packs of about 10 or 12. You can take more if you want. But we want to encourage us to be mindful of the fact that God is the provider for us and that we depend on him. But we need to put it in front of us. Otherwise, we so quickly forget and begin to take for granted the things that God has given to us. So can we do that? If you want, they're there. Help yourself to as many as you want, as long as you will use them and not be like me who collects realtor pads of paper and just stuff them in a drawer for a later day. We're going to participate in communion together right now. And as we do, I want to express to us actually that this is the practice of giving thanks. It's this word, Eucharisto. And this is the way we practice the presence of God. We stay present to his presence. And it is always a practice of the eyes. We don't have to change what we see, but only the way we see it. The root word of Eucharisto is charis, which means grace. Jesus took the bread and saw it as grace and gave thanks. He took the bread and knew it to be a gift from God. Eucharisto, thanksgiving. It envelops this Greek word, charis. And so I want to invite us to this table this morning, in a sense, figuratively speaking, this table of thanksgiving, this table of reminding us, God, give us today our daily bread.